From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, just blocks away from our state capitol, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. On today's show, we'll be joined by a special guest from our nation's capital to provide insight into an issue not being talked about enough: the religious freedom and human rights abuses taking place in China. We'll share what you need to know about this subject, including some lesser-known details of what's been taking place, why the People's Republic of China should be considered one of the most oppressive and totalitarian states in human history, and importantly, what the United States and us as individuals can be doing about it. But to start today, we want to recognize that this Monday is Veterans Day, an important day that we set aside to thank and honor those who have selflessly served our country. These brave men and women serve with honor, sacrificing their personal dreams and family life to defend the freedom that we enjoy daily. And we want to recognize and thank them for their service to our country. So thank you to our veterans and those who are still serving in the armed forces and those who are willing to make the ultimate sacrifice and lay down their lives to protect our country and our freedoms. The freedoms that we enjoy in America would not exist without the men and women who sacrifice to protect our country. And if you would like to join Nebraska Family Alliance in praying for our men and women in the military, NFA provides free prayer resources and prayer guides on praying for our soldiers in the military, and you can find them on our website under the prayer tab at nebraskafamilyalliance.org. Freedom is something that we enjoy in this country and something that countless American lives have fought and died for, but it's not universally shared and it's not guaranteed. And specifically, the value and principle of religious freedom is being undermined and oppressed around the world. And as Christians, we need to come together to support, pray, and advocate for those who are being persecuted for their faith. And it starts with being informed. So today, we're going to be putting a spotlight on China and the religious freedom and human rights abuses taking place that the Chinese government should be held accountable for, and that should be making international news every day. And we have a policy expert with us to share more about this. I'm pleased to welcome a special guest to the program today. Joining us from out in Washington, D.C. is Ariel Del Turco, who serves as Research Assistant for International Religious Freedom at the Family Research Council. Ariel, it's great to have you.
Thank you for having me, Nate.
Well, earlier this week, the Family Research Council released a new issue analysis about religious freedom in China that you authored, and it's a tremendous resource and overview of this issue that I think everyone should read. And as I read it, Ariel, it just struck me that how is this not something that we are talking about and hearing about in the news every day? Last month, I think for a few days, maybe a week, our collective national attention was on China when things kind of blew up with the NBA and Hong Kong protests. But now we've moved on to other things. And while the focus and media attention isn't on China anymore, the reality is there are still millions of people in China who are being persecuted by the Chinese government. Churches are literally being bulldozed, pastors imprisoned, religious minorities are being thrown in concentration camps. But we don't hear about it. So I really appreciated this issue analysis that you authored. And you even wrote that a strong case can now be made that the People's Republic of China has become one of the most totalitarian states in human history. And so we just feel strongly that we need to be talking about this. So, Ariel, I wanted to begin just by asking you, why did you decide to take on this subject and provide this new research and issue analysis on religious freedom in China?
Yeah, well, part of the reason that motivated me to write this is just that, as you said, people really aren't paying attention to the religious freedom violations that are going on in China every day, that some of which are very shocking, very disturbing, but they're happening every day and on an absolutely massive scale, but no one sees it. So And really, sometimes it takes an issue that touches America, like sports, with the NBA incident that happened a few weeks ago to like turn people's attention to, oh, wait, there's human rights violations happening in China. What's that about? So this paper will really give readers a clear overview of the main religious minorities that are targeted by the Chinese government, the ways in which they're targeted, and why they are. And so I hope this is a resource that people can turn to explore this topic more. And I think when they pay attention to it, it's going to really become a priority for them and hopefully in turn for our legislators and for our foreign policymakers.
Well, I hope that is the case as well. And so maybe I'll kind of back up here and ask you, how did we get to where things are at in China today? Could you provide some historical context to what we're seeing today with the religious persecution in China?
Yeah, absolutely. So this really started with the modern Chinese state founding under the Chinese Communist Party with Chairman Mao. And he really tried to radically change the culture in China. And one of his campaigns to radically change the Chinese culture was to, in his words, eradicate religion from Chinese society. And there's a variety of ways in which he went about that. And really, no religion was free from being a target. And we saw this really culminate in the Cultural Revolution in the 60s and 70s. And then after Chairman Mao's death, we saw a more of a moderate leader rise up to take control of the Chinese Communist Party, Deng Xiaoping. And with his rule, China eased back and started, instead of directly trying to eradicate religion, they tried to just regulate it a little bit. So there was control over religion. They weren't trying to usurp the authority of the Chinese Communist Party. But then we're seeing, really surprisingly, in 2012, with the rise of the current president, Xi Jinping, a return to these sort of Mao-esque policies of really trying to suppress religion on a wide scale and almost eradicate religions as they are. President Xi right now is making a move to do what he calls Sinicized religion. And really what that means is give religion Chinese characteristics. So he might allow some churches to exist, but these churches are going to be, first of all, subject to the monitoring of the Chinese state. And they're trying to replace many of the central Christian doctrines with doctrines that are acceptable to the Chinese Communist Party. We're even seeing where in churches, China will be taking out copies of the Ten Commandments and replacing them with pictures of Xi Jinping. They'll be taking out crosses and replacing them with flags. And this is a very physical manifestation of what China is also trying to do to the doctrine of the religion that they do allow to be expressed in China.
Well, that's really helpful to kind of understand how we got here and some of the historical context to what's taking place. So, Ariel, what's happening right now in China? What do we know is currently taking place that people need to understand and be aware of?
Well, there's a lot going on right now, unfortunately. One of the major things that we're starting to see get a good amount of press attention is the suppression of the Uyghur minority. It's in northwestern China, and they're a Turkic ethnic group, but they mostly practice Muslim. And really, China has turned this entire region into what a lot of people are calling an open-air prison. Facial recognition technology monitors every move that people make, and at almost every corner of every block in Xinjiang, every passerby has to check in with a police officer standing, guarding a booth there. So, I mean, China is completely tracking every move, all the behavior of this religious minority. And what's really shocking is that they have detained, without any judicial process at all, over 1.5 million Uyghurs, who are mostly Muslim, in these re-education camps where they are being indoctrinated with Chinese Communist propaganda. And There's even reports of torture. There's reports of rape. Really horrendous things are happening in these massive detention facilities. It's being labeled the largest mass incarceration in human history.
I mean, the largest mass incarceration in human history. It's just, it's shocking. It's shocking that this is happening today in the 21st century, and it's shocking that we don't hear more about it. And one of the things that you just mentioned that I think is new and incredibly alarming is this use of technology to oppress religious minorities in unprecedented ways through facial recognition technology to track people and monitor them as they just go about their day-to-day lives. I mean, what can you tell us, any personal stories or things you've heard that Christians or other people of faith in China are having to face and deal with just on a day-to-day basis?
Well, really, it's the restrictions. The restrictions are so tight in China over religious practice that it's really hard to live within the law. And that's why we're seeing large amounts of Christians being arrested, and typically they're released shortly after, but they're arrested because they're violating these tight religious restrictions, really often without knowing it. Some of the restrictions, if we're talking about the Christian community in China, you cannot buy Bibles online. They're starting to crack down on Bible apps on phones. Minors, like anyone who's a minor, any child at this point isn't even allowed to enter a Chinese church. And this speaks to how not only do they want to restrict religious practice now, but they're really trying to see a religious decline in the future. If you're having all these children of Christians not being allowed to be taught their faith in an organized way at church, you're going to see a very different Christian community in 20 years.
It's so heartbreaking just to imagine what that would be like. And we really need to find ways to be advocating for and praying for our brothers and sisters who are being persecuted and suffering for their faith. But something that did draw some attention to the human rights and religious freedom abuses in China are the ongoing pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong. Ariel, how is what's taking place and what's at stake in Hong Kong? How is that issue and what's taking place there with those protests? How is that tied to religious freedom and some of these larger issues?
Yeah, this is a really interesting development. And it's not maybe at first obvious how this ties into religious freedom, but for the Christians who live in Hong Kong, it is. What the Hong Kong protesters are really protesting for is for more democracy, and really they're protesting against further Chinese encroachment into their government. And the reason is that unlike the people that live in mainland China, they have free access to information. They know what's happening in China. They know the human rights violations. They know the religious freedom violations. They don't want to see more mainland Chinese influence into Hong Kong because they don't want to see Hong Kong look like mainland China, and they don't want to live under the restrictions that people there have to live under. And so for Christians, Hong Kong has a 10% Christian population. They don't want to face the restrictions that mainland China Chinese Christians face. And so part of their motivation for protesting is to protest for their own religious freedom because they know it's at risk. And even the Hong Kong protests are even have greater consequences, right? Because a lot of the pastors that do preach in mainland China, they're trained in Hong Kong. So if that possibility is cut off from them, we're going to see even more of a decline of the church there.
I appreciate you covering that because that's such an important and interesting angle that hasn't really been covered a lot. But of course, as we mentioned, this all kind of started getting a lot of attention in the United States when the NBA was traveling around China and playing games and doing a lot of promotions there in the midst of these protests. And Ariel, I'd love to hear just your reaction to kind of the coverage of what happened there and, you know, the reaction to the tweet from the owner of the Houston Rockets, who sent a simple tweet supporting the pro-democracy protesters, and then that got condemned widely by other people within the NBA and some people who we've seen been so quick to criticize the United States, and our own government leaders refused and were scared and timid and didn't want to have to say anything about what's taking place in China, which seemed to me just a great lack of courage and a huge missed opportunity to get to shine a light on this and help advocate for people who are being persecuted.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The NBA incident was especially discouraging and I think surprising to a lot of people because it demonstrated just how much that many of these American industries, the NBA is a perfect example, Hollywood is another big example, are beholden to the Chinese market. So what we saw is when the Houston Rockets general manager tweeted out a simple tweet in support of Hong Kong protesters, in mainland China, the state media paints these protesters as terrorists. So when the Chinese people and the Chinese government heard that, oh, this NBA manager is supporting these pro-democracy terrorists in Hong Kong, like, that was a big deal for them. And so really, we saw a very swift outcry from the Chinese and a very swift response by the NBA, apologizing, really walking back their statements. We saw LeBron James come out and say, oh, China's not so bad. Free speech really isn't that important. And really all of this demonstrates like how important the market is to these American companies. And we're seeing that profits are more important for them than speaking out on behalf of people who are suffering from real human rights violations, real religious freedom violations. And it's really sad to see profits be more important than those things.
That's a great point. And we really do need to see more people, especially those who have influence and can reach a lot of people, being willing to stand up and speak out about what's happening. And so we've talked about the crisis and the atrocities that are happening. But thankfully, Ariel, you've also written about some of the policy options for lawmakers and given some recommendations on how to respond and address this crisis. What do you see as some ways in which the United States can act in response to what's been happening in China?
So I would say the most immediate way that the United States can make a difference on this issue is through trade negotiations. The U.S., even in the past few weeks, we're preparing for and participating in ongoing trade negotiations with China. And this is an opportunity for us to look Chinese leaders in the eyes and say, hey, what's going on in Xinjiang? Like, what's going on with these human rights violations? We're hearing crazy things about organ harvesting with the Falun Gong. It's really a way to address these with China and make a statement saying, hey, if you're going to continue down this road of human rights violations, it might have a really high economic cost for you. And it's also going to have a diplomatic cost. This is the most simple option, but one of the most powerful that I think is the naming and shaming of these atrocities in China. Chinese leaders are very sensitive to being perceived as respectable and as a really respected superpower and a part of the international community. If the majority of the international community is going to stand up to them and hold them accountable for these actions, that's going to make a difference. That's going to affect what they do because they really value our respect.
That's a great point, and I think that would make a huge difference, and how great it would be to see that. It's to see that more people in the United States and other countries, government leaders, standing up and trying to make a difference on this issue and speaking out for those who are suffering and being oppressed. This is maybe a more difficult question, but I think it's important. Are there ways that each of us as individual citizens can respond or be taking action to help make a difference on this subject? It seems so huge and so overwhelming and so horrible, but are there any steps, even just little ones, that we can take as individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. The first, it's so classic, but it's always right and it's always necessary. It's just to pray. It's to pray for the persecuted church in China, for religious minorities, and that we would see an increase in religious freedom, and that Christ Church would not be oppressed in the largest country in the world. This is important. And another one is just to stay informed, right? This makes a difference just for ourselves and our culture, but also for our politics. The Chinese people who are oppressed can't vote in American elections. They can't influence American lawmakers, but we can. If lawmakers have a pulse on the feel of their constituents and they know, oh, they're starting to really care about what's going on in China, that's going to make a difference in the legislation that they push. A lot of the legislation that addresses human rights violations is nonpartisan in nature anyway, so it's not very hard to get passed through Congress. However, it's hard to get lawmakers motivated to put these things to a vote because they think, well, I mean, my constituents aren't Chinese. They don't really care. They care about their economy, so I'm going to prioritize other bills. By raising your voice even to your own lawmakers, that can make a difference. One other thing, just on a very personal level, is a lot of the products we purchase from obviously are made in China, but some of them are actually made in the Xinjiang province, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that they're made with forced labor from the Uyghur population. This is an enormous problem because, again, these companies, whether knowingly or not, and oftentimes they don't know because the supply chains are so complicated, but they actually profit from the forced labor of China's religious minorities. And there are lists of companies online that we suspect use this forced labor. If we're going to these companies and saying, hey, you have these ethical rules that protect your working conditions, can you investigate the situation in Xinjiang? And I see that your supply chain runs through that. If they're getting dozens or hundreds of letters that say that, they're going to investigate because they don't want a scandal. They do want to be seen as ethical. And that's a very practical way that I think average people can make a difference.
Those are really important points and really necessary things for people to understand. And I'll also mention last Sunday, and again this Sunday, is actually the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church. So a really important opportunity for people and entire churches to be praying. My last question, Ariel, how can people learn more about this or read the issue analysis that you authored for the Family Research Council on this topic?
To see my issue analysis, you can go to frc.org/China. And if you keep up with FRC, we are increasingly covering international religious freedom issues, and China is really a priority for us right now. So definitely check back for more on that, and we try to stay pretty up to date on the developments there.
Well, you guys do a great job. We appreciate the Family Research Council, and this is certainly a subject we need to be continually educating people about and praying for. So, Ariel, thank you again for giving us your time today and providing your expertise and insight. We really appreciate you being on the program.
Thank you for having me on.
And for more information on how you can help defend religious freedom and make a difference for family, freedom, and life here in Nebraska, visit our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. That's all the time we have for this week. Special thanks again to our guest, Ariel Del Turco. I'm your host, Nate Groz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.